Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Frownface Williams.
Whatever.
We got such a great show in store for you. We're going to be talking about the interesting and polarizing movie that just dropped this past weekend, Joker. So stick around as we dive into that conversation. We just recently saw it, and we're eager to kind of get a better idea on how each of us feel. So before we do, Spence, why don't you go ahead and take it away?
The Filmlosophers podcast are comically brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, check to see how the riots you started are doing, then head over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom,
and Pandora!
Well, no one's laughing now, but you can find out all our inside jokes by connecting with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
I feel like if you started a stand-up comic career, that would be your first joke. Like, well, no one's laughing now.
That's a terrible way to start anything, really. That's supposed to be comical. Finally, let's put a smile on that face.
Oh, hey, okay, take it easy there.
By heading over and checking out our entire list of episodes.
I didn't even put it in capital letters or anything, and you're over here taking it to the nth degree.
At filmlosophers.com.
I'm still stuck on your corral. Yes, head over to our website where you can catch over 180 episodes of all these great, wonderful topics and reviews. We just recently dropped an extra credit episode where we talk about Spence's issues with the movie It Chapter 2. And we got a lot of great stuff over there. So head on over so you can catch all of our other great episodes. One other thing to let everybody know, we are going to be hosting, alongside Video Game Bang, an upcoming trivia night.
It's returning.
It is. October 14th in Sacramento's Oblivion Comics and Coffee, the best place to get your coffee and comics in the same place, we are hosting, actually, a trivia night for Halloween. So Halloween-themed trivia night.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun on the bun. So head over to our website at filmlosophers.com. We'll have something written up there, as well as our Facebook and Instagram page. We'll go ahead and post the little advertisement there for it as well. But speaking of advertisements, we're going to go ahead and advertise where we're heading with this in the big, heavy size. As we are talking about Todd Phillips' Joker. This was a very interesting movie.
That's a way to put it.
This film has been kind of making its rounds in terms of conversation pieces with a lot of different people, and not just even in the critic communities, but even just people who have gone to go see it as regular moviegoers. It's been sparking a lot of conversation and a lot of polarizing views. Even now, as we speak, there are countless YouTube videos trying to explain what this movie may mean or how this movie ended. So I don't really know how to go about, like, considering all that with this film.
It's a lot. This movie presents you a lot to deal with, like, in the theater and afterwards, and it's kind of just hard to dissect it.
It really is. So we're going to do our best.
Yeah, we're going to try.
we're going to definitely try. So, before we continue, Spence, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
Arthur Fleck is a man struggling to find his way in Gotham's fractured city. I don't know why that just did not make any sense for me. A clown for hire by day.
That's right. I'm not editing anything in real time. What are you talking talking about?
A clown for hire by day. He aspires to be a stand-up comic at night, but finds the joke always seems to be on him. Caught in a cycle, cyclical
there we go.
Existence between apathy and cruelty, Arthur makes one bad decision. I disagree with that. That begins about a chain reaction of escalating events in this gritty character study.
Directed by Todd Phillips, who co-wrote the screenplay with Scott Silver, the film stars Joaquin Phoenix as the titular Joker, alongside Robert De Niro, Zazie Beetz, Francis Conroy, Brett Cullen, Glenn Fleshler, Bill Camp, Shea Whigham, and Marc Maron in supporting roles. Just a few pieces of information. Todd Phillips actually won the Venice Film Festival's prize, the Golden Lion, for Best Film. During his acceptance speech, Phillips thanked Warner Brothers. Quote, Warner Brothers and DC for stepping out of their comfort zone and taking a bold swing on me and this movie, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Phillips also thanked Joaquin Phoenix, who joined him on stage, quote, saying, there is no movie without Joaquin Phoenix. Joaquin is the fiercest and brightest and most open-minded lion I know. Thank you for trusting me with your insane talent, said Phillips, end quote. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Like, I'm wondering, like, who was in the audience for that particular filming or for that particular screening? Not to be like rude or anything. I'm not trying to be a jerk. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering who the audience comprised of. Another piece of information: Joaquin Phoenix actually lost a lot of weight for his role as the Joker. When you see the film, he is extremely the epitome of the definition of skin and bones. Mm-hmm. Like, he is scarily skinny.
Yeah, like at certain points, like just him moving his normal, like his body looked like, oh, this is like some monster because something is wrong with this man.
No, completely. It was so serious that filming could only be done once with no opportunity for reshoots. Todd Phillips had to write the script during production. So that says a lot about the film itself. Mm. I mean, if you have somebody who's so committed to the role and doing something so drastic like that, that it causes the director to only be able to shoot once and not do retakes or reshoots. Retakes you can do multiple times in the same shooting.
Yeah.
It's like after the fact, like, all right, we shot this in the can. 2 months, 3 months later, you're like, oh, hey, Joaquin, you know that one scene that you did, blah, blah, blah? We need to reshoot that.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah, not with this film. talking about the numbers, the budget for this film was $55 million, and its domestic opening weekend, it raked in over $96 million.
Not surprising.
Not surprising at all, making it the number one film in the box offices from this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that said, we're going to do our best to kind of gather somewhat of a semblance of a conversation about this movie without really getting to the point to where it's completely one-sided. Because there are great arguments for this film,
mm-hmm,
on both ends of the spectrum. And I think that's the thing where we're both caught in the middle of.
Yeah.
As individuals who love movies and love cinema, there are elements of this film that speaks to us. But also from the other opposite side, there are things that speak to us as well for that. So I think it's just going to be safe to say that this film is going to be with a spoiler warning.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been warned. It's in the title. This is a spoiler review. Just be mindful, we are going to be talking about elements of the film that will give away key points, because I don't think
there's no way you can have
the conversation about this film without having those key elements. I was in here with producer Corey, host of Video Game Bang, and he was talking to me about what we were talking about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hold on. Is it okay if I tell you this part? And he's like, no, don't ruin it for me, because I still want to see it. I'm like, okay, well, so you see, because there's this one. No, I can't say that. No.
Yeah, no, see, I've been there exactly for the past couple of days when people keep asking me, how'd you like it? Or what'd you think of it? I you just start want to vomit up, like core details.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way to really talk about it.
But then people are like, oh, no, don't say it. Don't say anything that's going to ruin it for me, because I still want to go see it.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, then just go see the movie.
Yeah,
come back and talk.
Otherwise,
to me,
you just end up saying a whole bunch of noncommittal things.
So all that to say, this review is going to be spoiler filled. So you've been warned. I'll put something in the sound like a dur, 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 something. I don't know. I'll put
an air horn.
I don't know. I'll put something right here. Cool. Okay.
Okay. Great.
The power of editing. Imagination. So, with that said, Spencer,
yo,
we've talked at length about comic books and the history that we have, each of us, in comic books. To refresh that memory, Spencer, what is your vast experience with this particular character in The Joker?
The Joker is mostly restricted to the live-action Batman movies, the animated 90s Batman series, and then some of the more recent Batman games from the Arkham series, which were
true.
Delightful.
Very true, except for...
Except for that one.
Except for Arkham Origins.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one can go back to AC Double Hockey Sticks.
But still, the rest of them are great.
The rest of them are fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, Rocksteady.
Mm-hmm.
So your knowledge of it is at the level of certain mediums like the TV shows, the obvious movie choices.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Non-comic related.
Right.
Okay. Great. Because that makes a lot of sense to me because I'm a little bit more comic related. I read a lot of the comics from the 80s with Joker. I saw a lot of the parts of the Joker where he was just this comical equal foe to the Batman. I've seen the animated series. I've seen the Batman Beyond film where he comes back in the form of the doctor, the scientist.
I didn't see it, but I heard about it.
Yeah, it's Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, or something like that.
Yeah.
I've seen every live-action film with the Joker, from Suicide Squad to Batman back in 1989. Every iteration of the animated movies as well, mm-hmm. Including the incredible Dark Knight Returns. That has a great whole little spiel with the Joker in it. But on top of that, like my comic book area of expertise, it was funny because I was talking about this the other day and I was like, in terms of comic books, I've seen so many iterations of the Joker that I'm not even sad. Like none of it makes me feel bad at all. Everything from 1980s, you know, Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns in that comic book, that whole graphic novel, The Killing Joke. There's actually a graphic novel just called Joker. It's pretty surreal and visceral. There's several comics where it explores certain parts of the Joker in different lights. One of the more recent ones is like Endgame and the craziness of him in Death of a Family. And then even in the more recent iterations where, like with Flashpoint had the Joker... Spoiler alert if you haven't read Flashpoint. The Joker is actually played... So in Flashpoint, it's an alternate universe of where we are. So instead of Bruce becoming a orphan, he's actually the one who dies. And Thomas Wayne takes on the mantle of Batman. And Martha Wayne becomes the Joker. So it's pretty cool in terms of its ability to create a very nuanced version of the Joker that you may not be used to with like the cartoons. It gets very comical at certain times. It gets a little hokey. I cannot stand, and if you bring it up in this conversation, I will shut this podcast down if you bring up the Lego Batman Joker, because I cannot stand that.
I actually didn't see Lego Batman.
Thank God, you are wonderful.
That's the only time you've ever been happy I hadn't seen something.
I don't like that movie at all.
Look it up.
It's
just like I kind of didn't expect you to have that.
I don't
negative
like
of a reaction.
That one. I really don't like.
Okay.
I just like Chad liked it. It was very kid like. It was very fun. It was very whatever. But I didn't like it. It was over the top. And there's a level of campiness that I'm okay with. And that one's in that vein of like. No.
Okay. So quick off topic question: is this more campy or less campy than Batman 66?
Maybe a little bit of the same. Like, I don't like Michael Cera. Michael Cera's in it. Zach Galifianakis plays the Joker. I don't like him as a Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Will Arnett, there's only so much you can take. He's perfectly spaced out in the Lego movies because he's not given so much of a forefront, but he's literally in just about every scene.
Right, he's Batman.
Yeah, I just and like the whole dynamic between Joker and Batman, I just don't like that. Like, it's like a love thing between those two rather than just, you know, he's the epitome of evil and he's this and that. Like the Joker's just upset that Batman doesn't have time for him anymore. That he's not his nemesis or his number one worst enemy. And that upsets, that pickles the Joker and makes him upset. And he goes through all this effort to make him notice him. That's literally the plot of the whole film, right? I just told you.
That sounds ridiculous.
It is. I don't like it. Needless to say, I've had a lot of experience with the Joker, and I've seen a lot of iterations of it. So part of where I stand with the Joker is I understand that he is, in some essence or some way, the truest sense of evil in this DC universe. Mm-hmm. Everything from the Killing Joke, where he ends up paralyzing Barbara Gordon and forces, you know, Jim Gordon to look at pictures of his daughter while they're torturing him, naked pictures of his daughter, and just forcing the whole idea that it just takes one day to turn someone bad. There's so many different variations of the Joker that you can draw from. To the Joker graphic novel that makes him more like a mobster and he's just ruthless and he's just, yeah, from the point of view that you're seeing of a thug the entire arc, he ends up killing that thug at the very end of the book and you're like, oh, okay, cool. So I've seen several iterations and several levels of depth to this character. So when you introduce something like Todd Phillips' Joker, then I worry because of the fact that you're posing the opportunity to create another level that is deeper than what has already been created. Now, you look at what the comic books and what the TV shows and what everything else has created thus far, and you're like, okay, so right now we're at like a depth of like 50 miles under the Earth's crust. You're like, all right, this is pretty deep. They've created quite the, you know, unique story element to it all. All the way to where even the Joker ends up tricking in, I don't know if you ever played the Injustice game.
Not the story mode.
Well, in the it's based on the comics. Oh. And in the comics, obviously at the very beginning, the thing that sets it all off is,
oh yeah,
Joker. Yeah, tricks, okay, Superman into thinking that he's fighting Doomsday, and he ends up beating up Lois Lane, sending her into outer space, and she ends up dying and finds out that there's a baby in her belly, and he kills them both. And then at that same time, the Joker ends up detonating a nuclear bomb in downtown Metropolis and kills everybody and laughs it off, which is why, like, it's almost kind of satisfying when Superman, like, swoops down to the interrogation room that Batman has him in and literally shoves his arm through Joker's chest, killing him. So the depths of his depravity and the nuance, like, the interesting nuance of how he views the world has been widely already established. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, when they're creating this element of a new Joker or a different take, that has to be a pretty unique take, or at least a different element to this particular character than what's been expected already or seen. And so I think this is at the point where we find ourselves, you know, wondering, like, what else can they do that doesn't make it become intolerable? Like, I don't know, say the Suicide Squad, Jared Leto.
Do you know how many times I keep forgetting that Jared Leto was the Joker? Like, every time I learn it, my brain's like, no, you don't need this. And it just deletes it out of my head.
I wish I could delete it out of my head. Unfortunately, when it comes to movies, things don't ever go away. They're always there in my brain and I feel bad, which is why I still am so easily upset with you when it comes to The Amazing Hulk.
Oh, yeah, that's on you. You need to learn how to delete stuff.
You know what? I don't need to take this. Except for another hour. So, I drive all that to say, expectations. What were some of your expectations for this film coming into it? Obviously, with the trailers.
That trailer, though. That was pretty good. Like, that trailer got me pretty excited for this. I was like,
which one, the very first one?
The very first one.
Okay.
Because I was like, okay, like, DC seems to have a plan now of not being terrible. I'm on board for this because it looks like there might be doing something interesting in this movie. So I was super excited to just see it. Because, like, I was super bummed when they canceled the press screening for it, and we had to wait a few more days to go see it.
It's true. It was one of those elements where it's like, it's created a lot of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
Before the film has even debuted, it created a lot of buzz. And I'm just going to be honest with you. It created a lot of buzz, both in positive and negative. You have a lot of the people who were talking about it as it being this wonderful, great thing from the Venice Film Festivals, and it got the Lion Award or the Golden Lion Award or whatever.
It got like an 8-minute standing ovation.
Yeah, it got like all these wonderful, unique things, and then it comes back to the States to hit the regular press circuit, and the press is pretty much equally divided. You have individuals who are like, oh my gosh, this movie, this is going to be great. This is definitely up for an Oscar winner, blah, blah, blah. This isn't that. And mind you, it might, you know, who knows? But at the same time, there are people that are saying, well, you know what, this film, you know, might not be responsible. It's doing this, it's doing that, it's blah, blah, blah. And then on top of that, you have the families of the victims from the Aurora, Colorado shooting, sending a letter like, a week or 2 weeks before the film actually debuts to WB, to Warner Brothers, saying, hey, we know that time has passed and things are being healed and whatnot, but we don't want this film to be an element where people are impressed upon to do hurtful or horrible things. So we just want to make sure everybody's on the same page, and we won't stand for this movie or support it if it's doing these elements and creating negative mindsets based on something that somebody in Aurora, Colorado used as a muse to do what he did in the event of him shooting up an actual movie theater filled with people who were going to see The Dark Knight Rises. So they sent that letter, and then obviously WB, they sent a letter or they created a statement. They made a statement or whatever, saying that we completely agree and we don't want you to feel worried about, you know, us condoning this, because we don't condone any kind of behavior. We don't condone anything that would create monsters and whatever, and this film definitely doesn't do that. So with all that in mind, my honest expectation was that this film, to not create a powder keg, this film needs to not do Or this film needs to do what the film, what the letter said it was going to keep, you know, in terms of its letter. It was going to keep to its word. This film was going to keep to its word from the letter.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to condone these things. It wasn't going to create muses. It wasn't going to become a muse for those who are, you know, mentally not well or so forth. This isn't going to be one of those types of movies. So, you know, it's interesting in that element, because you don't want to put the expectation on it that, like, oh, well, this movie is never going to be like, it's not going to show up like that. It's not going to be that way. It's not going to do these things. But at the same time, you have to be weary, obviously, as responsible filmmakers and film goers. We have a responsibility, almost a right to see things from multiple views. It's one of the things that I hate / love about being on a podcast and doing a podcast, is that as much as I may hate or not like a movie or not really care about it, I will still give a film its fair shake, and endure it and find the things that make it worthwhile in terms of, like, okay, well, despite everything else I faced, this film still had some redeeming qualities. It did this, it did those things, it did that, blah, blah, blah. And give it a fair review. Like, I'll give it a fair review and talk about it at length. Unless it's something completely ridiculous, like, I don't know, Sharknado 6, then you'll definitely get me, like, from here to the moon, and I will completely lose my cool.
Okay, you're still, you know, mad what? About it.
I don't need to, you know, I don't need to bring up about how horrible. You know what? Listen, Elsa, I don't need to let anything go, because that was one of the... That was one of the low points in my career.
Okay.
You don't know my life, okay? Mm-hmm. No, I'm just kidding. But much like that, like, I gave it our fair shake, mm-hmm. and we reviewed it. That's what we're going to do on this episode.
Yeah.
We're going to take a look at the film, and we're going to look at all different perspectives, but I'm going to give it its fair shake. And as I feel you're going to do as well, you're going to give it its fair shake. So that was my biggest expectation. What was your biggest expectation?
I saw the same letter thing, like their response to it. And, you know, I kind of just assumed that they would, like, you know, be responsible about it, because it would be just wild to me if they were like, oh, yeah, whatever, we didn't really think about it. But, like, you know, them putting out a letter saying, like, you know, we're going to make sure that this doesn't do those things that you guys are worried about. I just was, that was like my expectation was, you know, like them probably setting up Joker in a way where, like, yeah, he's crazy and psychotic, but, like, they're placing the responsibility of his craziness on himself in a way that, you know, doesn't, like, just sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of what I was going into the theater with. Like, between the trailer and that, I was like, okay, we should be good on, like, the crazy front, so, like, let's see a movie type thing.
Yeah. And that's where you were at by the time coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like we said, we got a chance to see it, and, yeah, first impressions, right outside after the theater, right after the screening, I'm gonna be completely honest, I really had no idea what I was feeling when I left the theater.
Same.
This was one of those types of movies where you don't just immediately run outside of the theater and be like, oh my God, did you see that? And did you see that part when this happened? And then, do you know, like, because of the fact that we don't just go to movies to just see them, but we're absorbing the movie so that way we can reflect back on it. I don't know if I should have absorbed that much stuff. That's like when you go and you're like, you go to the table for Thanksgiving and you're like, all right, I'm going to eat. And then you grab everything on the table and then you eat it all. And you're like, I shouldn't have eaten all that. Like, that's how I felt leaving. I'm like, I think I'm stuck in a perpetual mindset right now of, like, you know, this was good, but at the same time, this wasn't good. It's like this unfortunate yeah. seesaw of equal weights, and you're like, well, like, I could go to one side and be like, oh, this was unique and beautiful and blah blah blah, but at the same time, I can go to the other side and be like, this was completely irresponsible and bad and blah blah blah. It goes back to, like, I was saying, I had this conversation with Corey, and I'm like, I don't know how best to explain it to you, because this film has me so flustered and confused that I don't know if it'll even make sense in my own head. I don't know. Like, my mindset was just so jumbled when I left the theater. What about you?
Same. No, I was in just a jumbly mess because, like, you know, as you get deeper into the movie, okay, the best, like, comparison I've got is the I Love Lucy episode where she goes to work at the chocolate factory. Like, it starts off at a pace where, okay, but then you start really, like, examining what people are saying. I'm like, wait a minute, is this true? But, like, then the chocolate is still speeding down the beltway, and you're like, oh, no, I got to catch up. I don't have time to think about this. And that's what I was doing through this movie. Because, like,
wait, did that just happen? Wait, what is happening here? Hold on. I'm still processing, like, 15 minutes ago. Hold up.
No, seriously, I got stuck, like, processing things that had happened and was, like, starting to miss things that were happening. So, like, I had to, like, drop thought processes just to make sure I kept up with the movie. Because, like, there was times where, like, Joker
would
say,
are you dropping packets, Spencer? A little bit of a server joke, sorry.
yes, I was. Yeah, because the Joker would say something and be like, wait a minute, let me really validate that statement.
Yeah.
But then he'd do something crazy, and I'd be like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
One of the things I learned early on about this film, don't stop and focus on the little things. Just take it all in one full swing.
Yeah.
Like, I was stopping and, like, I was looking at everything else that was happening in the scene. I'm like, oh, there's probably Easter eggs somewhere in here. Something's probably happening in the back end that I'm not looking at. It's going to be like setting up something else. Like maybe, I don't know, Mr. Miracle is going to pop up somewhere, blah, blah, blah. Or like, you know, I don't know, like who's an old school, like old school superheroes or whatever. I don't know. Like you're going to see a young Superman or something. I don't know. Something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I learned after like 15, 20 minutes into the film, I got to stop doing that because for this film, you can't focus on like everything else around. You have to watch what is happening in the scene because what the film intends for you to see is exactly what you need to focus on. And I made the mistake of like looking everywhere else for the first 10, 15 minutes. And it was like, I just missed something. What the heck happened? Oh.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that was important to the whole story. Oh, that was about, this is not. Like, oh. It was frustrating because for somebody who goes into a quote-unquote DC film and having every single other prior DC film be like freaking Gretel or Hansel and like leaving breadcrumbs like a mad person, it's like you're looking around on the floor and you're like, what the heck? There's nothing here. What am I supposed to be following? Like, wait a second. And then I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to be following the kids. Okay. And just like walk behind the kids. Like, that's what this film felt like. Mm-hmm. Like, don't look at the ground. Look at the film. Look at the scene. Don't look at around. Look at the film. Look at the scene. And in all honesty, I had to take a second and actually realize, you know what? I appreciate this. I'm not focused. Like, you look at any film right now, whether if it's everything from Disney. Yeah, everything from Disney. I'm like, yeah, Star Wars, Pixar, Marvel, even DC. A lot of the bigger movies out there nowadays, the ones that are really making the big impact, they are doing stuff in the film, and then they're doing more stuff in the background. So you're like, oh, that's cool. Oh, I see. That's, you know, okay. Oh, like you're realizing that you have to pay attention to the larger picture. And for once in a long while, I was watching a film within that vein of like type of film. And I was like, you mean I can just watch this? Like I can just sit back and just watch it? Now, mind you, that proved to be a lot more difficult as the film began to move on. Like I was like, wait, my brain, it hurts. Stop. Like, that became much more of an issue. But needless to say, it was still a better mindset to be in of like, well, cool. I can actually just sit back and take in what is intentionally happening because that is what the filmmaker has intended to happen for the scene. Yes. Now, here's my first interesting observation about this film, even before the film even started. Hmm. You have this interesting, like the synopsis said, this interesting, gritty character study. Who the heck gave Todd Phillips the ability to do a gritty character study when the last few movies he's done have been hangover movies? What type of, what happened to Todd Phillips that made him realize, oh, you know what? I should do a character study on Joker.
Easy, DC. DC and Warner Brothers. That's exactly what happened.
Because I'm like,
they're like, we need something new that will bring the fans in. The Joker is the way to go with this. Todd Phillips, you do something.
Yeah, because that makes perfect sense. You bring in somebody like Todd Phillips, like, I can see that now. That whole, like, pitch meeting. We need to do a Joker movie. Just fully focus on the Joker. Okay, all right. Well, how do we do that? We bring in a crack team, great writers, and we bring in somebody so prolific as a director, they'll be able to make this incredible. All right, who'd you have in mind? You know, Alfonso Cuarón? No, a little bit out of our price range. Okay, what about Denis Villeneuve? No, he's busy doing some sci-fi stuff. Well, who'd you have in mind? Picture this. The director from old school, Starsky and Hutch, and all the Hangover movies.
I really feel like that just right there says so much.
How does that even make sense? Like, it's what? That's like one of those things where it's like, I really hope that that wasn't the case where they were like, oh, well, this makes sense. Sure. Like, you hand them this big old platter of like, Well, let's see. When they were in, I don't know, Bangkok, and they were seeing stuff. Or Mike Tyson, you know, knocking people out because somebody stole their tiger after getting super drunk overnight. Or old school with Will Ferrell streaking by himself down the campus. Snoop, Snoop-a-loop. I'm assuming you never saw old school.
And then you add in the Joker, and it fits the trilogy. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I don't get how that made sense to somebody at some point in time. But it did. And they were like, okay, because Todd Phillips, he's one of the writers. We did mention that. Him and Scott Silver are both co-writers of this particular film. Here's the thing, though. I'm going to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. I think Todd Phillips went in and was like, hey, you should make the Joker be an actual clown. And then Scott Silver's like, okay. And just make sure you put me in as writing credits, too. And then he left. Because this movie's beautifully done. Like, the yeah. entire story arc of this individual, this man, mm-hmm. is very smart. It's very well done. And just to kind of give you insight, like, Scott Silver, he's the one who did, like, 8 Mile. He wrote 8 Mile. He wrote The Fighter, the screenplay for The Fighter. Mm-hmm. For The Finest Hours, the one about that Coast Guard rescue that they did during, like, back in 1952. It's with, what's his name? Chris Pine and Casey Affleck. But, like, those are really great films. Like, he's actually done really... He's written really great films. So, I don't know if... I'm just assuming, like, I would really hope that he actually did, you know, contribute a substantial amount of writing credibility.
So, since he has a writing credit. But you also have to remember, like, you know, DC's probably going to be fiddling with this, too. Because
yeah, I know.
They seem to be the group who's like, oh, we can totally make this work. You just run what you have by us, and then we'll have our red marker and just take out the things we hate. And then they highlighted half the script and then rewrote it.
Yeah.
That would be my guess, based on nothing.
Well, speaking of, like, filmmaking, the actual film itself, you have to give credit to where credit is due. And Joaquin Phoenix does an incredible job of mm-hmm. playing, like, someone not mentally well.
Yeah.
This person obviously is somebody who suffers from mental illness, and it's widely made aware from the beginning to the end. Like, he's got issues, and not just issues with the way his mental stability works, but issues in just the way he views the world altogether, the way he just sees things. It's almost like a sense of being naive. Or, because I wouldn't want to call it ignorance, but it would be more like a sense of naivety where he just doesn't understand. Like, he hasn't been exposed, or he's choosing not to be exposed to, like, the way the world is around him. So he does that really, really well. And knowing that, like, Joaquin Phoenix is capable of doing either somebody like this or somebody like the Emperor from, like, Gladiator, where he really plays somebody loathsome. It's really cool to see him take on not only just emotionally and orally, like, you know, with the way he speaks, but even physically, like, the depths he went to make his body look like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Especially just the way he moves, the way, like, just his whole demeanor throughout the movie is pretty amazing, because I think he's doing a great job just portraying, like, this crazy, like, mentally, like, handicapped person.
Yeah, no, it's true. I was like, yeah. Because ultimately you come to find out at the very beginning of the film, it's one of those elements where he helps people recognize at the very beginning that his laugh is not his fault. It's a mental reaction to things. It's part of his disability, so to speak, his inability to discern when his laughter comes out. His laugh is almost activated by emotion, not so much fun emotion or happy emotion, but any emotion mostly. There's that perspective, and that's an interesting take on who the Joker is, because now at this point, then you're making the reasoning behind why he laughs so maniacally all the time, at everything, and it gives a little bit of a bit of texture, if you will, to the Joker in terms of like, okay, well, maybe he is somebody who can't control his laughter. You know, maybe that's why he laughs so much.
Yeah, I guess. But like, it also seems really difficult. Because like sometimes, like, there's a part in the movie where like he's laughing so much that he can't tell a joke. And I'm like, if you can't even tell just one joke because you're stuck laughing, like, how are you going to be a criminal mastermind later on?
True. That's very true. That lends itself to the mindset of like, if you're portraying the Joker, one of the things that you recognize from every iteration of the Joker,
mm-hmm.
from the comic books to the animated series to the live TV movie, or, well, live TV movies with like 1966 Batman, but even with the movies, live action films,
mm-hmm.
the Joker is somebody who is intelligent. He is somebody who, beneath all the rest of his crazy mindsets and everything else, he's actually a criminal mastermind.
And very deliberate, I would also say.
Oh, extremely deliberate.
Yes.
Like, there's no question about it. He is extremely structured and methodical.
Mm-hmm.
Because despite whatever happens in his whatever scheme that he's doing, he's got another scheme in the back end just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never to the point to where, oh, he's planning to fail. No, he's actually planning to continue to make more fun for himself, because that's just the way his mindset works. And you take that into effect and you compare that to this particular individual who just is like the biggest slapstick comedy comedian in all of Gotham. Like, they should have just seen him like fumble around and try to grab stuff or move around or whatever in his big shoes, and that would have been funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't need to go through all that extra effort of like, oh, well, I'm a comedian and blah blah blah, and look who's laughing now. Like, no.
I feel like this is we're coming into the bigger problems of the movie, because I don't feel like this Joker, the one from this movie, could have pulled off anything like what Heath Ledger's Joker did in like The Dark Knight.
Oh, completely. I agree with you 100%.
Because that just takes like such, you know, I have to plan this. I have to like find a group of guys to help me do things in multiple places. In this movie, like, he just is places and things just happen to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not because, you know, I am deliberately causing chaos. He just walks into room and oops, chaos happens. Look at that. I can't believe that happened.
But I'll take advantage of it while it's happening and go do something else. Or
yeah, that okay. This is where I got stuck in this movie. Because for most of the movie, I was convinced nothing was happening. Like, none of it was real. Because everything with this guy was just way too easy. And like, just, well, isn't that lucky that this happened for the most part? Like, when he's running from some cops, he just so happens to start a riot on a train. And isn't it nice that, like, oh, this one guy invites him onto his television show, and then he has a perfect chance of killing him, and like, the guy doesn't even like cut the interview short when things just take a wild turn.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many just weird things that seems like, hey, somebody would probably have questions, or this guy wouldn't be able to do the things he's doing. Like, that's where I started to get stuck, because earlier on in the movie, like, this movie, like, it cuts out of like the actual reality of the film and cuts into like a fantasy and then just slides back into the reality of the film without much, like, you know, without much to do about it. And then once that happened, I was like, well, that could happen at any time. I don't know if anyone in this, I don't know if he has a mother right now. I don't know if any of this is happening. And that's kind of what set me in this, like, deep spiral of, oh, he's interacting with this woman. He stalks her. The woman comes back later. It's like, were you stalking me? And he's like, yes, I was. And she is charmed by this.
Which makes no sense.
And I was like, well, she is so fake. She's just like, no way. Like, and that is probably was my main problem for this movie was I started to lose touch with reality, which is interesting. Seeing as how I feel like this Joker also lost touch with reality, but it just made it really hard to follow along with what was in fact happening and what was not happening.
Yeah, because early on in the film, you're given a sequence where him and his mom are watching their regular version of like Jimmy Fallon. It's called Murray Franklin Show. Mm-hmm. It's like a nighttime, what are they called? Variety show.
Yeah.
And it's the guy Robert De Niro plays Murray Franklin, and all of a sudden they're watching it, and all of a sudden he transitions into being in the audience.
Yeah,
and he says something, gets the attention, and like everything changes for him. Like where the host like brings him down, is like, oh, let's give him a round of applause. You're a great guy. You love your mom. Blah blah. This and that.
Yeah, and I wish like, you were my son.
Yeah, I wish I wish I had a son like you. Blah 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 blah. Like okay, all right. Okay, we get it. This is like a fantasy, like a daydream of his or whatever.
Yeah.
But then as the film continues, then other things happen and you're like now beginning to question reality. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're seeing things happen that are being affected by his choices. And you're like, well, he's not really paying for his consequences. And it seems as though he's continuing to get off like scot-free without having to pay those consequences. And I think a lot of this leads us to kind of like my biggest, one of the biggest issues I have with the film. It's as a film, cinematically, this film hits a lot of the right boxes.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful film. Mm-hmm. It is shot beautifully.
Yep.
The lighting on this film, the coloring, it's superb.
Yes.
The story arc from a very general perspective is done very well.
We need to come back to that.
Yeah. well, trust me, we got plenty of time. That part is like very interesting and it's very beautifully done. Mm-hmm. The cinematography, just class act.
This is a gorgeous movie.
This is a very beautifully shot film.
Yeah.
However, from a moral standpoint, from the perspective of a responsible moviegoer. Because here's the thing. Plain and simple, we have this podcast. And with this podcast, we are given charge to have the opportunity to explain to those or to give to those who listen to our show a valid and meaningful review of some of the films that we cover or discussions that we cover.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, on our quote-unquote soapbox, you have to begin to wonder, like, what is the responsible thing to do in terms of being able to convey to people that this film could incite violence or even create negative mindsets? We look back at the Aurora, Colorado shootings, and we look at that guy, and he was completely like driven by somebody who had a complete and equal opposite in the film of The Dark Knight. You had Heath Ledger's Joker and you had his complete antithesis of who he was in The Batman. And that's how that story went. And yet someone was still impressed enough to utilize that moniker or that persona and do what he did. Now, you take this film. There is nothing of an opposite or equal force to come against this Joker, this individual. And it kind of seems a bit on the because I almost want to say irresponsible perspective, not just on, because, well, first off, on the filmmaker's part, to create a film where you have somebody, you have this unstoppable force in the Joker, and you have it colliding. Normally, you have it collide with this immovable object.
Yeah.
And your big crescendo is when those two finally come to clash. And that's when you see what happens. That's pretty much like how every arc is in the comic books or in the TV shows or in the movies. Something happens and this comes to a head. Whether if it's a battle of wits, a battle of physical attributes, a battle of whatever. There is nothing stopping him in this film.
No, there's nothing.
And this film takes it to a degree where if somebody, say, somebody who, much like the individual who went to do what he did in Aurora, Colorado, if somebody went to go see this film just to find that one reason to do what he wants to do, or that one excuse, I earnestly believe this film could be that. Now, I've been struggling with this for the last few days, and I've been thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't want to be the complete negative Nancy to any kind of conversation. If anybody has valid reasons as to why not, why it shouldn't be this way, I'd be more than happy to hear it. Unfortunately, I haven't found anybody. Mm-hmm. Every person that I've talked to that has seen the film has stated that this film, oh, you got to look past that. You got to look deeper. There are videos. You even sent me one. After we saw that film, you sent me one from Film Theory's MatPat, mm-hmm, explaining like, oh, well, you know what? It's actually deeper than all this. It's actually, so what you don't know is, you know, what actually happened? Did that actually happen this way? You know, what's the subcontext? And mind you, had it been in any other film or any other character and this film was portrayed, I would totally say there would be people out there who would go and look at this film and do exactly that. They would dig deeper. They would focus on that. However, I don't believe the people who are looking for that one reason are going to dig that deep. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to take the time to look into the film and be like, oh, well, you know, I get disrespected from people of the opposite sex. Nobody takes me seriously, but I'm going to go see this movie about this thing, and I'm going to look at the sub-subcontext. It may say that if I get off my meds and I, you know, go ahead and just do whatever I want, I'll feel better and be myself. But you know what? I'm going to look at the deeper reasonings behind it. They're not looking at that. And you have to look at the lowest common denominator of who your film is going to be viewed by. And if that lowest common denominator is individuals who just don't really understand deeper meaning films, then it's like, I don't know. Well, this is what it says. This is what it means. So, I mean, hey. And a lot of those, it's interesting because a lot of them, the group that a lot of them usually tend to carry that kind of like idolizing of like the Joker, mm-hmm, they're incels or involuntary celibates. An incel. Are you familiar with an incel is? Mm-hmm. So an incel, they're essentially members of like an online like subculture. They define themselves as unable to find a romantic or even sexual partner despite desiring one. So ultimately they're incapable of finding somebody who will find them attractive. Mm-hmm. Or even just desirable. And so they carry this hate. They carry this anger towards the world. And apparently that person, the guy from the Aurora, Colorado, you know, shootings, he was apparently one of them. So it's seriously a little difficult to look at people and hope and pray like you're looking at someone and be like, oh, well, because you can't be prejudging. You can't just judge people out there in the open. That's not really cool. And you look like, oh, that person looks like an incel. Like, we literally live in a community where our communities, some of them are just, some of them look different. Some of them look however. And it doesn't mean that any of them are like that or whatever. It just means they're different. They're unique. They're the people in our community. Like, it's, it, you can't, judge people right off the bat. However, with that said, you never know who's watching or who's seeing this film. And I mean, I feel like that's just something that's just scary, you know, because you don't know if it's that one person who happens to see the film and be like, oh, so if he could do that, I could totally do that too. Because that was the mindset in this film. You know, yeah. once Arthur Fleck got off his meds and did the first killing of those people in the beginning of that film, he tells his counselor or whatever, I feel like I'm finally seen. Like, I feel like people can finally see me. You know, I don't feel invisible anymore. And it's like, that sounds like somebody who just did something really bad.
Yeah. I guess it's also a problem that the movie doesn't really, like, I feel like the movie kind of just sides with the Joker, and that, like, in the fact that, like, you know, he did the right thing for him type thing to become what he was supposed to become in this weird way, which is kind of really an awful message to just send to everyone, especially when, like, you're kind of praising a mass murderer.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's a completely way to show, like, you know, that the Joker wanted to be a mass murderer, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that's not asking too much to just, you know, put that out there of, like, yeah, he wanted to, like, kill people, but this is bad ultimately for, like, Gotham and just the world in general, and should not be treated like a Christ-like figure like they were at the end of the movie.
Completely. And mind you, here's the thing. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, but, like, in the videos, in the YouTube videos, oh, but you know what? If, you know, that wasn't actually real, how do you know that was real? Because then, you know, with everything else that's happened, then you have to wonder, like, is he imagining this? Or is this just, like, part of his psyche that's happened? And I'm like, who cares? Like, I get it. From a very nuanced film student, mm-hmm. who is doing his, you know, his dissertation on the vast character display and case study of Arthur Fleck's Joker, you know, in Todd Phillips' latest film, blah, blah, blah. Like, yes, there's that one or few people. Mm-hmm. But like I said, there are also other people who will see this and say, oh, okay, this gives me permission. And it's not like, I'm not saying that this one film, if one person is offended, whatever, then it's like, okay, well then just, you know, smack on your hand. Like, no, that was bad. But the fact that there's a whole community there's a whole group of people out there who gladly carry the moniker of an incel. Well, look at this film, and mind you, yes, in this film, you come to realize the girl that he's been quote-unquote seeing, it's all been in his head. Like, he literally shows up in her apartment one night after, like, a really crazy evening or whatever, and she's freaked out. She's like, what are you doing in your in my apartment? Like, you're the guy from down the apartment, right? And you're like, oh, so they weren't real. They weren't a thing. And you're like, oh, so he's not found attractive by people of the opposite sex. I wonder what else that describes.
Yeah, like, that's one of the few things I was like, well, I knew she wasn't real, because if she was, she
out of
was
everything
a
else that happened,
crazy person.
She's not real. No one could find him attractive. No, and just
no one, no one, literally no one except maybe Harley Quinn.
His mama
is gonna be like, "Were you following me?" It's like, "Yeah, I was. I was stalking you all day." And it's like, "Oh, that's so romantic." Like, no. Like, no, that's when you run. You call the police and you just run for your life. Like, that's how I knew she was fake, because that just made no sense.
Yeah. I think the idea of this film is to create a sense of newness and freshness with the story of Joker / Arthur Fleck. And I get that. You know, however, I don't see how doing something like this, and mind you, here we go, taking a step back, because honestly, there's been developments before the show even started, and I was talking to Corey, and I get it. We do live in a time where we spend a lot of our worries concerned about other people or other entities that are out there in the world who might offend each other. And yes, we're in a very fearful mentality kind of state right now where people are worried about being proper and recognizing like proper nouns about everybody and making sure people treat people with respect and so forth, and things kind of getting out of hand as well. Like we have a mutual friend, me and Corey, we were talking about, and he the other day was like talking about like, I feel like I'm going to get in trouble if I say anything and blah, blah, blah. And mind you, yes and no. There's a level of like understanding of like, okay, whoever you're surrounding yourself by, that might be part of the issue. Like if you can continuously surround yourself around people who are going to constantly berate you or treat you as such, then yeah, that's your own fault. You know, but either way, being a part of this day and age, there is a sense of being careful, being mindful. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Now, he had mentioned the Dave Chappelle's recent comedy sketch or comedy special, Sticks and Stones. I don't know if you had a chance to check that out.
No,
it's on Netflix. It's actually really good, but like he talks at length, Dave Chappelle, about how we need to move out of that mindset of fear and kind of see things for where we are and start recognizing that like those types of mindsets are actually destroying lives more than helping. Like you have now two incredibly strong viewpoints on either end. You have people who are like super left and super like conservative and super whatever, or super, I'm sorry, on the right, who are like super conservative and super Republican and super like super, super Christian, to the point to where they're like, you know, singing hymns at you in Westboro and all that kind of stuff. And then you have people who are on the super left, super liberal, super focused on like, oh, you know, equality to all and blah, 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 and this and that. And yet, you know, and we're going to fight and whatever, and equally as passionate. And then there are people who are like in the middle, who are like, I want the world to be okay with everybody. And I want to live in a world where I don't have to fight with somebody because they assume that I'm assuming their assumption of my assumption of them. Like that, and that's how confusing it can be. And I think we're kind of in an age where we're starting to get the understanding where those mindsets no longer have to be hammered in at such a high volume, but it can be part of the life we lead and everyday practices. And I say all that to say, no, we shouldn't allow a movie to be pushed aside or squandered because it doesn't speak the language or the message that we want. Freedom of speech is for everybody, including the negative Nancys or the inept directors. Not that Todd Phillips is inept. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, I'm just saying there's some inept directors out there that have bigger stages to do stuff. But either way, what's his name? The guy who did the Transformers movie,
Michael Bay.
I'm talking to you. So yes, we should never hinder the opportunity for somebody to speak their piece and to give their opportunity to share their viewpoints, even if it's in film. Everybody should be allotted that. However, in that same mindset, we have to be responsible enough as critics, not just as filmmakers, but as critics, because what is the one thing that people look towards when they talk about, when they hear about movies? They don't just look at the director and the trailer. They look at reviews. Mm-hmm. They look at critics. They look at us. They ask us, what did you think of this movie? What did you think of that movie? How is this movie? Did you do a review on that? And it's upon us to make that responsible choice.
Yeah.
Filmmakers are going to be making films for God knows how long, till the day we probably die. And there's everything from the most ridiculous G-rated movies to NC-17 stuff. Stuff that I don't even wish to ever see ever again, probably in the history of ever. And nothing's going to change that. But you know what will change? The ability to have people like us or critics out there give responsible reviews and earnestly say, don't take your kids to see this movie. If you got a 12-year-old child who has this fetish for loving the Joker and he loves the animated version because that Joker is just so funny and Mark Hamill makes the greatest laugh, I mean, he's right, but don't take him to see this movie. That's not the Joker that he's going to see in the film. That's not the Joker he's going to see in this story arc.
Yeah.
Batman is not in this movie. Yes.
Bruce Wayne
Baby Bruce Wayne is, yes.
Which is weird from a timeline perspective.
Oh, completely. but I think overall, I think we as reviewers, we as critics, we have to be responsible. We have to tell people, hey, this movie, yes, cinematically is good and you should experience it, but don't be irresponsible with it. Recognize that this movie does have disturbing parts in this film. This movie has disturbing scenes. There are elements of this film that get extremely violent. There are elements of this film that just may, you know, turn your stomach. But it's part of the overall story arc. And I think that's where I kind of have to leave it at. Like, that's kind of where I have to stop it at. Because as much as I would love to dig deeper and to say, well, you know what, this and that, and blah, blah, blah. In all honesty, I can't. Because if I was to be honest with myself, there were parts of the film that I did enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
There were parts of the film that I thought was really well done, really thought out. Even the storyline, even certain elements of the more disturbing parts, I was like, I really like the way they did that. I really like the way they focused on that. I like the way they did these things. But if I were to allow every ounce of me to be like, no, don't see it. Ah, you shall not pass, and drop the hammer, I'd be doing our audience a disservice.
Yeah.
By removing the opportunity for them. If they trust us, I'm removing the opportunity for them to create their own and formulate their own opinions about this film. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, as much as I probably don't intend to see this film again.
Yeah.
I think that's the plain truth. I don't know if I can honestly look down on it either.
Yeah, no, I am right there with you, because this isn't a bad movie.
No.
But it's not a great one with a good message either.
No, not at all.
And really, it comes across almost as like they were like, oh, we want to put these things in our movie. But then they didn't think really about how it all connects together properly.
Yeah.
Because if they did, I really don't think this is the movie they would have ended up with.
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. And I think the idea of this film, I hope it still stands as the reigning thought, but the mindset is that this is a standalone film. Todd Phillips has no intention of creating a follow-up. Please, I really hope that's not going to change. I really hope that's the way it's going to be, because I don't know if I don't know where do you go from there. Like, you can't continue the story of Joker, because it just doesn't make any sense. You got a Batman who's like 7 years old.
Yeah, that's my main
and
question.
And a Joker who's like 40. It's like, there's a little bit of a time frame difference there. But like, what is he? Joker's like walking around with his, you know, with we've been missing all those scenes with his cane and his his walker and his wheelchair.
I think really leaving the theater, that's really my only main like real question about this is like, so is there supposed to even be a Batman in this universe? Because it seems like the way things are going, the Joker's just going to have total control over the city soon.
Well, and that's another element of the story. That's like another aspect to the darkness of what this film is. I don't think there will be. Because you have this storyline where at the end of the film, after everything that's happened, all the chaos, you know, Joker has killed about like 6 people, and you know, at the end of it all, he's actually committed and whatnot. And he starts laughing to himself. And he, you know, he's wondering. He's the person in the room. She's like, looking at him, is like, well, what's so funny? What are you laughing at? And he goes, you wouldn't get it. It's kind of a joke. It's kind of a joke
between me and him.
It's just a joke between me and him. And it's essentially like, it goes back to the scene where Bruce is sitting in the alley with his parents who had been murdered. Yes, they do the whole trope again. You see the pearls fall.
Please, please, for the love of everything, just stop.
Just have them fall down a manhole next time. Just let them do that. Let Killer Croc take care of them. but like you realize like he's talking about, so the joke is they're both now orphans. Like, okay, I guess I get that. there's a lot of this film where it's like a lot of the times in this film where you're just like, okay, that was dark. All right. And then there are parts in this film like, how does that fit in with the overall film? Because right after he does that joke, then he does this whole Scooby-Doo run, like where that whole Benny Hill song should be going like.
Really? I was expecting that to start playing at like any second.
So, yeah, I think that's where I think I have to leave it at, because in all honesty, I wouldn't recommend anybody under the age of, you know, 18 to watch this. But then, I mean, hey, if you're super mature for your age,
yeah,
you know, I guess, talk to your parents. But, like, everybody else, you know, be mindful of what you're getting into, you know, plain and simple. So, with that said, are there any last-minute thoughts or opinions you had, Spence?
I think we covered pretty much. Well, okay, there's just one last thing I go on.
All right, what is it?
Something I brought up before. This Joker is not funny.
He is not funny at all.
Like, not even in like a morbid, twisted sense. Like, like some of the other Jokers, like Heath Ledger, Dark Knight, the whole pencil trick. Like, that was really morbid, but it was like a tiny bit funny. There's none of that like vein of like something that's a little funny in there, except for one scene. Like, really the funniest line comes from his mom, where when he's like, I want to be a comedian, and she just looks at him and is like, don't you have to be funny for that? And like, that was such a burn that it was the best line in the movie.
I actually half expected him to like push her head deep into the water or something.
Like, what do you mean I'm not funny?
Well, he came back for her. But but yeah, like maybe like I've not seen some of like the darker aspects in like the comic books or the animated movies because I haven't seen them.
I'll but, educate like, you. Don't worry.
In the realm of Joker I'm familiar with, he's at least just the tiniest bit of actual humor in there.
Yeah.
So that was kind of something I was missing.
Well, there you go. So with that said, let's go ahead and go across the table, Spence. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know what? It's okay. Late. Cut it out. I haven't had my cookie. So with that said, Spence, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
See, this is real hard. Because it both passes and fails on multiple levels. It's fails at being responsible in like the content matter it's dealing with, but like on a real technical aspect, it's a really excellent movie. And so I'm gonna go with it both passes and fails on those two merits.
You're doing this again.
Yeah, no, I have to, because like I feel like both, like just failing it outright or passing it outright is kind of unfair on both sides. As for an actual score, I'm gonna have to give it a 3. Yeah. Because like the movie like just throws things out without like really thinking it through. Things happen in this movie for the Joker that with like such ease that I was questioning if this was real or not. Like, when you need to question the reality of the entire film that you're watching, and that's not the intent of the filmmakers, that's a problem. But that's also the thing is, I don't even know if that was the intent of the filmmakers. I'm all over the place with this movie, so that's kind of why it gets a 3.
Well, I have to agree. So the film passes for me. Cinematically, like I said, I'm not going to lie. It is very beautiful. It is a very well-done film altogether. Even if I don't agree with the story arc and all that, I have to give where credit is due. Mm-hmm. And this film is absolutely stunning. So it does pass for me, despite the story element or whatnot. Because there have been films in the past that have been beautiful and yet have horrible like story arcs and whatnot, and sometimes you just have to look at a film and be like, okay, this is necessary, but at the same time disdain or horrendous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like you look at both sides and you're like, it's necessary, yet it evokes these negative emotions. Like there's a film out there, what's it called, It's a film about drugs and whatnot with Jared Leto and actually Jennifer Connelly and what's his name? One of the Wayans brothers. Marlon Wayne. There you go. Directed by Darren Aronofsky, called Rec Room for a Dream. Extreme head case type film. But nevertheless, it's definitely like a piece on like the whole psyche of a mindset while someone's on drugs. And it's a very unique case study. So with that said, I'm also going to give it a 3. Because as much as I would consider this film a misstep in the direction of moral ambiguity, it has room for people to perceive it as differently. And it's all up to the viewer. It's all up to the people who go and see the film and perceive it as how they wish. If you're going to go and see it, if you're going to go and experience it, then experience it in a obviously in a responsible way. Don't like drag your kids or drag your little nephew or niece or your brother or your sons, or don't like take people who aren't supposed to be seeing this to the movie. Like, I seriously better not go to the theater and see like a whole family of 7 people and 4 of them or 5 of them are kids and the 2 adults like, oh, we're gonna go see the Joker. No, don't do that. This film definitely is not for people like that. But experience it and talk about it, discuss it, work it into conversations and ask how people feel about it. Because in all honesty, it is a really big point of conversation for a lot of people right now. And I think the biggest way we can recognize how to be responsible with this type of information is to make people aware that it is evoking this type of emotion, or it is causing this, or it is making these things happen. And by doing so, people can become aware, you know, and then make the choice in the future. So, whew, I had to take a deep breath after that one. oh, man. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch all of our previous episodes at filmlosophers.com. We have over 180 episodes where you can watch or listen to. We're not on YouTube yet. You can listen to all of our great conversations. We've had some awesome interviews in the past, along with some great guests. We actually did a recent episode with Spencer at the helm of our review of the Back to the Future trilogy with his good friend and avid listener, Marcus.
Yep.
So that was really fun. So check that out if you get a chance. But yeah, check out the rest of our episodes, and you can check us out on all our streaming platforms. Every major one. We're not going to go through them all because Spencer hates when I do that. Pandora! But yeah, either way.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. Also, like we said at the beginning of this episode, we are having a awesome trivia night coming up October 14th at Oblivion Comics and Coffee in the Sacramento area. If you're in that in the city around that time, head on over, check us out, win some great prizes. It is Halloween themed. So if you know your Halloween, come on down. So, but yeah. That about wraps up this opportunity and this conversation. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.